Good morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm Jan Peterzelka.
And today, Jan, we are opening the vault of the Master Gardener Help Desk and looking at some frequently asked questions this time of the year. We know that it's hot, hot, hot outside, and we're excited to be able to see where this takes us for the rest of the summer. But before that, we want to make sure that if you have any plant questions and if you want to visit with Master Gardeners, you can always find them at Ardovino's Farmers Market each Saturday morning.
Absolutely. They'll be there today.
They have an educational booth out there as well and be able to answer any questions that you may have. If you are also interested in learning a little bit more about gardening, we do work with the City Office of Sustainability every year and put on a Gardening 101 series. And the next topic coming up is going to be on July the 7th. And we'll have our Master Gardener Speakers Bureau talk about good bugs and bad bugs in your garden. So we know a lot of things are happening out there. So if you have any questions and want to learn more, go ahead and visit out there with us on July the 7th at the Viscount Recreational Center and make sure that you contact the Master Gardener website where you have that link to register.
Exactly. And I think it's very, very important that we understand the importance of bugs. I'm good friends with our IPM specialist, and she teases me all the time because she loves to collect them, and I'm always going, ew! But I really shouldn't because most of them are good bugs, and they're very vital to the health of our gardens.
Right, definitely, exactly. So there's a lot of things going on with that, but let's talk a little bit about what's going on the help desk. What kind of questions are folks out there asking?
It was interesting. It's so much fun to do that because, for one thing, it's a great learning opportunity, and then we can kind of get an idea of what's going on in El Paso, and we're talking about bugs and pests. One of the questions that often comes up this time of the year is about grubs. And in doing a little bit of research, there's all sorts of different kinds of grubs, but there's really the white grub is really the one that causes the biggest problem, and this is the time of the year that it does it. We know the most commonly is June bugs or June beetles, and it may or may not be a problem in your yard, but if you dig up a square foot area of your yard and you find between 5 to 10 of those lovely little white, slimy, wormy-looking things, then you may have an issue throughout your yard with grubs and would need to treat it. And there's all sorts of treatments that are out there, all of your nurseries and big box stores. And so keep an eye on that.
And there's, the overall visual on that is that there's kind of brown patches in your lawn.
I was going to say there's a patchiness that's and it's not always grubs. So that's why I recommend that you dig up that little area and see if you've got those little critters floating around in there. And regular treatment. And if you've been treating regularly, you may not need to treat every single solitary year, but this would be the time to do it.
Right. And, so be able to look out there. I mean, you had to troubleshoot first of all, to see if you're getting enough water in a spot that's going to create that brown spot to begin with. But if not, it could be those grubs. And that's definitely part of what we consider integrated pest management,
absolutely,
where we're actually looking and not just spraying and praying, if you will,
right,
on a certain area of your lawn, but truly identifying exactly, what that insect is. It's causing damage and then be able to treat that respectively.
And that's important, too, because it goes back to our Earthkind principles that are so important. It's a whole different show, but, we don't want to get out there and spray if we don't have to. Minimize the use of pesticides and insecticides. Not that they aren't necessary sometimes, but if they're not, then, they don't. And you have to watch because, lack of watering, so forth and so on, can present itself the same way a grub problem might. So you have to know if you have the problem with the grubs
before you start. Good idea.
And you can, if you do, you can almost roll up a section of your lawn because they eat the roots of the grass and it just it's gone. And also a spongy feeling is also a good indicator that they may be present as well.
Wonderful.
So that was one of the things that we get questions on. And, of course, right now with this unbearable heat, though, I believe today we're having a cold front. I think we're in the high 90s. So, you know, don't put your jackets away. Right? If we're as hot and miserable as we've been this last couple of weeks, imagine how our plants are. And so watering is a key issue. And we talk about watering a lot on our shows. And certainly it's a prime question that we get on a regular basis throughout the year. So we really need to know the proper way to water. And to do that, there's some tips that you can employ to make sure. If you can use a long screwdriver or a soil probe to see how far down you go before the probe won't go anymore. There's some good indicators on how deep you need to go for different kinds of plants. And for your ornamentals, you're going to want a good 8 to 12 inches, I believe. And with shrubs, 12 to 18. And on down with trees, of course, a couple of 2 to 3 feet. So you have to know how far down the water goes. So don't just automatically think that I've got to water this often, or gosh, everything looks real dry, so I'm going to throw more water out there. A lot of things die from overwater rather than underwatering. And so that's a key issue here.
Right. And it's really not looking at putting, you know, 6 inches of water on at one time.
Exactly.
But it's really looking at that infiltration rate of how far that water is going to seep into the soil profile. I like to use a rule of thumb of for every 1 inch of water, you're going to get at least 4 inches of percolation into mm-hmm. that soil. So, you know, it's really good because you want to hit that target amount of, you're not going to be able to get all of the roots, if you will, but if you, you know, strive for those, you know, top 75-80% of those roots of your respective plant, you're able to keep your plant in a really good water situation, if you will.
So I think so too. And another thing that's, in chatting with one of our Master Gardener interns who knows a lot about irrigation, we were talking the other day about the time of day to water and considering your soils. You know, do you have sandy soil? If you have sandy soil, that water's going to zip through that, you know, and go down through that soil much quicker than it would be if you have a clay situation like you might have on the west side of town, or a riparian situation. So those are things to consider as well. And watering early in the morning, really, especially with all of this heat, is probably the best thing that you can do. And how often, you have to really watch. And it depends, especially with your containers. You know, they dry out more quickly. But again, don't assume that they are all dried out just because the soil on the top of that container looks dry.
Right.
It's a whole different story.
Exactly. So definitely deep and infrequent watering are going to be a really key for a long-term landscape health for your plants as well. And it's really, you know, sometimes you just have to supplement, you know, when you're adding on there. If you put all your water on at one time, a lot of times you're going to get runoff as well. So I like to kind of recommend the soak and cycle method where mm-hmm. you have your sprinkler system run on and then let that water percolate and then come back and hit it again. And that's going to ensure that you have enough time for that water to avoid ponding on top, and whether you have a sandy or a loam or clay soil out there as well. So it's really important to be able to look out there. And sometimes if, you know, also if you're looking and you're walking in your garden, and I know that we talk about being in the garden early in the day, even though our watering restrictions don't allow us to water past 10 a.m.
Right.
And until after 6 p.m. But really that early morning walk through the garden and working through there is the best time to be able to identify issues. It's much more comfortable. But also it's a good indicator if your plants are wilted in the morning, they need more water.
Because in the afternoon when they wilt, think of ourselves. We wilt as well.
Right.
And we put on hats and we protect ourselves, and our plants are doing the same thing. They'll fold in on side of themselves to protect themselves. And then if you look at that same plant at 7 o'clock, or this time of the year, probably 8 o'clock, right, it's really perked up. So
right,
you're right. And besides, that's the best time of the day to be out there.
Yep. Yeah,
much more comfortable for us.
Yeah, that midday wilt is something that's kind of hard to avoid right
it
now.
It is.
All but, right.
And mulching is another thing, really key piece of this. If you mulch 3 to 4 inches in your flower beds and even with your containers, and there's different kinds of mulchers that are out there. The decorative ones are good. So all sorts of things to do.
Excellent. So mulching definitely can be organic or inorganic.
Yes.
You know, rocks, nice small pebbles also serve as an organic, as a mulching source, but mm-hmm. they don't provide any kind of organic nutrients
There's
or
no
breakdown
value there,
on there.
But in glass, you can get ground glass at the different drop-off points with environmental services, and that adds a pretty touch to your garden, though, like you say, it does not add any nutrient value. So I prefer that over, I prefer the composted mulches and one or the red bark mulches, and they add a nice aesthetic value to your garden as well.
Right. Great. Nice insulator to kind of buffer those soil temperatures.
Exactly. Exactly.
Excellent. So what else, Jan? What else, other questions
well,
are we getting from
we
our
also,
help desk?
A lot of times we're getting a lot of questions about fertilizing tomatoes, and our tomatoes are, you know, they're producing, the ones that we have at the gardens have just been amazing. But the plants don't always look really, really, really great. They're heavy feeders. They're heavy feeders, so you're going to want to fertilize them on a regular basis with a, we recommend a high nitrogen content. There's actually tomato fertilizers that are out there in a water-soluble form. It just depends, but you kind of have to keep an eye on them. And of course, a little, we have an excess of phosphorus in our soil, and that's what produces blossoms. And our, of course, our tomatoes come from blossoms mm-hmm. that are pollinated by the wind. And so, you know, just keep a close eye on them, and consistent watering is very, very important. Otherwise, you're going to end up with things like blossom end rot, where the tomato gets that yucky end on it. You can cut it off. It doesn't mean you can't eat it, but and some tomatoes are more susceptible than others.
Right. And there's a lot of, you know, issues when you're looking at fertilizing tomatoes, and also more of a balance, because if you end up putting too much nitrogen on there,
exactly.
then you may get too much of that growth going on, and not enough going, and the nutrients going into the food fruit production as well. And yeah, blossom end rot, as I understand, it's a physiological issue. There's a lot mm-hmm. of components that can contribute to that. Sometimes we overlook the fact that we have calcareous soils in there, but it may not be the right form of calcium needed
exactly.
for the plant to take up. So, you know, there's always a little tricks to be able to kind of figure out what's going on, but identifying that.
Consistent watering is very important with our tomatoes. And there again, we say they look puny, so we run out and we drown them.
Right.
And
then
we should, and not at 12 o'clock noon, please.
Yeah, then we end up with some issues of cracking
exactly.
as well. So that's definitely the balance on that. Well,
for sure.
Excellent. Well, there's a lot of great questions coming in to the help desk right now, and the Master Gardeners are available. They're all year round answering questions for you all. So if you have any questions, make sure that you call the help desk to be able to get you your identified your issue, or be able to kind of give you some pointers on how to be successful in your garden. And before we're out of time today, we want to make sure that we have time for our plant of the week. Jan, you want to talk a little bit about our plant of the week?
And we've chosen the anisocanthus. I know that's a big word, kind of like mayonnaise. But the common name is Mexican fire, and it's a beautiful deciduous shrub that gets 4 to 5 feet tall. It's got really pretty bright green leaves that are about 2 inches wide. But most of important to me is it's got bright red-orange flowers. And the hummingbirds love them because they can get their nectar from those flowers. And they bloom from June through October.
Right.
They get really big. And I give mine a pretty severe haircut
right.
at the end of the season. And they come back, and they're the plant that keeps on giving every year. It's got a kind of a rapid to moderate growth rate, and it's a water conservator too. So perfect for El Paso.
Wonderful. And that's going to be your plant of the week. Well, we're almost out of time on today's show. We want to thank Evan Walsh for engineering and producing today's show. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm Jan Petterzelka.
And remember, a gardener's shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.